Mr. Webb.
Good. Good afternoon. It is 1:36 p.m. on March 8th, 2018. I'm Randy Chrisman, Chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission, and with me today are Commissioners Brian Krashus and Julie Fedorchek. This is an informal hearing on a bunch, in fact, 14 different cases. I'm not going to read off the whole title of all of them, but I will go through the case numbers. All 14 of them start with the initials PU for public utilities. And after that, the 14 cases are 10-101, 10-102, 10-103, 10-104, 10-105, 10-106, 10-107, 10-108, not 9, but 10-110, 11-171, 11-172, 16-641, 16-642, and 16-690, all FPL Energy of North Dakota wind decommissioning cases. And I don't think there's a purpose in going through each of them and identifying which facility is which, so I'm just going to skip that part. We'll go around the table and ID everyone as well as in the rest of the audience. I would just ask that everyone speak pretty closely into the microphones. They don't have a long range for being picked up. Not opening comments, but just...
Brian.
I guess I've already...
You already introduced us.
Jack. Sorry.
Jack Shue, Commission staff.
Jerry Land with staff.
Daniel Billings, NextEra Energy Resources.
Casey Fury, attorney with Crowley Fleck, here on behalf of NextEra Energy Resources, LLC.
Andrew Young, NextEra Energy Resources.
Are we doing the whole room?
Yes.
Perry Oberg.
Oops. Not quite that close, but.
Perry Oberg, NextEra Energy, Engineering and Construction.
I'm John Olson. I'm with Olson Efforts, and I'm here representing NextEra Energy.
Julie Volk, Regulatory Affairs, NextEra Energy.
Good afternoon. Jason Utton with NextEra Energy.
Levi Andrus with GA Group PC.
We also do have a number of individuals that should be appearing by phone as well.
Yep. You got Sean Callahan with Demco here on behalf of NextEra.
Callahan?
Yes.
Callahan? Okay.
Hi, this is Tracy Davis, Senior Attorney for NextEra Energy Resources.
Can you repeat your if Casey can?
Tracy Davis.
Okay, next.
You have Joe.
Go ahead.
Joe Balzano, Assistant Treasurer for NextEra Energy, Inc. and all of its subsidiaries, including the North Dakota projects that are financed.
First name was what?
Jay Clevin with AE2S, representing DEMCO. I was a part of their project team in assisting with developing the estimates for decommissioning.
Is that it? Okay, and we have Steve Call here at our electronic controls as well.
And Alana. Alana walked in.
Oh, and Alana Jeff Kotzak was here as well, our legal counsel. This is an informal hearing, so it involves only undisputed facts. If things that are disputed come up, we'll have to close the informal and move forward with the formal hearing. With that, I would want the company to go first and present whatever it is that you have. So I'll turn it over to you, Casey.
Thank you. So to provide some background on the filings that are before you today, pursuant to the commission's recent, can you hear me? Is this tracking all right? All right. Pursuant to the commission's recent wind decommissioning rulemaking in PU 1723, NextEra has submitted updated decommissioning plans and cost estimates for all of its facilities and has also filed proposed financial assurance for all of its facilities whose operations commenced prior to January 1, 2018. NextEra had contacted staff and asked for a compliance timeline of when these filings would be due. Certain filings were due by December 31st, 2017. The remaining portion of the filings were due by this July. NextEra submitted all of the filings by the end of December. For the facilities in which proposed financial assurance was filed, a parent guarantee was filed by NextEra Energy Capital Holdings, Inc., which we're going to refer to as NEECH. And NEECH is an entity whom the commission has previously approved as a parent guarantor in case numbers PU13794 and PU13795 in regard to the Edgley 1 and Edgley 2 facilities. NextEra appreciates the opportunity to provide the commission with additional information today regarding both its proposed financial assurances as well as its revised decommissioning plans. And with that, I'll hand it off to Danielle.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Christman and Commissioners. My name is Danielle Billings, and I'm Director of Business Management for NextEra Energy. I oversee approximately 35 wind farms in 7 states in the Midwest, including all of the wind farms that are existing in the North Dakota state. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today and look forward to answering any questions that you might have regarding our decommissioning plans. NextEra Energy Resources values its relationship with the state of North Dakota. Through our subsidiaries, we currently own and operate 14 sites, as we mentioned. Our first wind project was built back in 2003, and over the last 15 years, we've invested over $2.5 billion in the state. And we continue to see the state of North Dakota as a great place to do business. In short, we're here for the long haul. We take great pride in our work and work very hard to maintain our relationships with the landowners and local communities. And we have a strong interest in making sure that any projects that are decommissioned are done right. And with that, we'll open up to any questions that you guys have.
Staff, did you have anything to add before we go to questions?
No, Commissioner. I believe that Jerry Lean, he reviewed the files, and he asked for this informal session with the commission so the commission would have the opportunity to ask questions about the methodologies regarding the decommissioning plan and cost estimates more specifically, but also leave the conversation open for the financial assurance portion as well if the commission has any questions.
I'll turn it over to, Julie, did you have any opening or anything? I don't, but before we go to Brian, I guess it's his portfolio.
Just a few general opening comments. I appreciate the approach the company's taking on this. You're being really forthcoming. I appreciate that you filed all of them at once rather than kind of staggered, and I think it's helpful for us to be able to look at them kind of globally like that and really have a good conversation with you all, since you're probably the biggest single developer for wind in North Dakota. So other than that, just look forward to a good conversation with you today and hopefully coming to some agreement here before too long.
Okay, Brian?
All right. Thank you, Randy. I'm going to jump into or go over to the cost breakdown, and what I'm going to do is refer to PU-10-101. All 14 cases are very similar in terms of the cost breakdown, the layout of the documents. So there's some slight variances in cost related to those, but just to make things a little bit easier, I'm going to use that as an example.
So just so I know kind of how we're going to structure the discussion, do you envision going through each case by case by case?
No, I'm using 10-101 as the primary example.
Right. Is that how you...
I also the same, but there are a couple things that I see that distinguish like one from the rest that I want to ask about.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm thinking of handling these globally, as you said.
Okay.
I like the
perfect.
Yeah, there's some slight variances. We can get into that, but my questions are more general in nature. And the one thing as I was going through and related to the cost breakdown, I wasn't seeing the level of detail that I personally would like to see in terms of where these cost estimates are coming up from. Now, this was, just to clarify, these cost estimates were given to you by DEMCO?
It was a combination of DEMCO and AE2S.
Okay. So when I'm going through and I see the removal of oil and grease, hub removals, tower removals, et cetera, the one thing that I really wanted to get some more information on would be, where's the scrap metal going to go for these facilities? Because they're scattered around the state, but is there a general location that you have in mind?
Sean or Jay, do you have any thoughts on that?
This is Sean Callahan with DEMCO. So generally, you know, we're national contractors. We've worked in almost every state in the country. So we generally use a scrap broker. Since we usually have, you know, 15 to 20 jobs going on at the same time all across the country. So all of our scrap goes through one broker who arranges trucking and transport and the individual scrap and recycling facilities that the material goes to. So we kind of discussed with him on what pricing was out there, and he would arrange it specifically based on, you know, the location in the state and based on pricing and what, you know, how you can get there with trucking. If it's not, you know, what we try to generally do is if we can use something that's close and more local, we do that. But if the pricing, there's a large variation in the pricing, then we'll use a scrap yard that's a little bit farther away.
Okay. And what about, that was related to the scrap metal, where would the blades go? Because they're not scrap metal, they're fiberglass.
Correct. So the blades, we just find a local disposal facility. It always has to be NextEra approved. So we'll run that by them. If they say yes, you know, it has to be like a regulated facility, a facility that everybody agrees to. But it doesn't go into a farmer's field, if that's what you're asking. We always use a NextEra approved facility, and it'll go there with documents and manifests on waste manifests, and all that gets included in the closeout package.
Okay, so in the cost estimate, going down to, where is that included in the cost? Is that just a part of?
That would be, we threw that in the, that would be in the nacelle and hub removals.
Okay, so that cost estimate includes
Disposal
and, okay, just disposal, the down tower equipment removal.
Not the down tower equipment. It's involved in the nacelle and hub removals. So that's where your fiberglass is. The entire unit is encased generally in fiberglass, so that also has to be disposed of. So, but we're not talking about large quantities. We're talking about every windmill, you know, they vary in size, but generally speaking, you only get about two 30-yard dumpsters of fiberglass, you know, for disposal is what you get. One to two is what you usually generate, including the blade.
Are those broken down on site, cut into pieces on site then before transporting?
Correct. Yep. So we'll take it there and we'll stage them and you know, utilize chop saws and things, other materials to size reduce those, load them into just basic 30-yard dumpsters and get rid of them that way.
Okay. And then, all right, in terms of where on this, on the cost estimate, would I find, now let me ask first, the roads, the access roads between the turbines, are they gravel?
Yes.
or topped with gravel, I should say. Okay, that's yes. And where does the gravel go?
Generally, Andrew, do you want me to speak on this? I mean, I could just speak out loud. I just, you know.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Okay, that's all. It's not my call, so I don't want to step out on anybody's toes here. But generally, you know, we've done a lot of these projects in the past, and oftentimes, obviously, gravel and stone is an asset for reuse if you can. So we try to recycle it. And also, I mean, it may not be the case here, but a lot of times, you know, this is leased land with farmers. So in other cases, in Pennsylvania and other states, the farmers actually wanted the roads, so we kept the roads in. In other cases, the farmers wanted the roads removed, but they wanted the stone. You know, for a farmer or for something of in that nature, obviously stone's an asset. So there's always somebody, an end user. I have not put it into a disposal facility yet. I don't think that wasn't a requirement in what I did for Florida for NextEra. But, you know, generally, it's that would be an asset.
Do you market, or not, maybe market isn't the proper word. You're not reselling it, are you, or do you resell it to people that are interested locally?
I mean, if you had a large quantity, you could resell it, but I'm not including any salvage credit for that. I'm basically just, that's either going to a farmer, it's going, you know, somewhere else. I don't have that going to a disposal facility.
Okay, so essentially that's scraped and then used locally or distributed to either that particular landowner or someone in proximity, or as you say, sometimes the landowner may say just leave that particular road in place because they want it.
Correct. What I priced is removing the stone and putting dirt back in its place to match the natural. That is what Florida or NextEra asked me to do. But as far as a cost to dispose of the stone, I don't have a cost to dispose of it because I know that at absolute worst case, somebody will take that for nothing.
So is that included in the backfill, topsoil, and seed category?
Correct.
So that's $13,500 on, again, case 10-101. So you can get that. How many miles? One thing that I didn't see on the estimate would be miles of access roads for a particular facility.
So I'm not sure that we have that data in front of us. We can get it for you, but I don't have the specifics on how many miles at each site. Each one's a little different.
So is this priced out, though, based on, you know, the miles, the number of miles of access roads on a site? And then that would be used as a part of the calculation to say we have X amount, you know, so many miles of roads times X amount to scrape the gravel off. And because the assumption, correct me if I'm wrong, but the assumption is that the landowner will not want the road to remain in place because you don't know that, correct?
So I'll speak to that, I guess, to start. Yes, the assumption is that we're going to have to remove the roads and take that out, even though we would work with the landowners at the time of decommissioning and the commission to figure out what the appropriate responses based on what the landowners want. Sean, do you know exactly how that was calculated?
What that was calculated on was a per turbine basis. So generally, how we came up with this, or how I came up with this, is we kind of did an aerial assessment, you know, of each site and kind of looked at it. But just, and then generally speaking, you know, these turbines are, sometimes it varies, but a lot of them are pretty consistent with how far apart they are spaced in the roads. So what we did is we just took what it would take from going to one turbine to the next, because this is a per-turbine price. That $13,500 is a per-turbine price. So basically, from that stretch of road to the next turbine is what we did. You know, and at the bottom of each one of these turbines, there's, you know, a landing area that's usually a little wider. So it includes all of that, if that makes sense to you.
Okay. I think I would want to see more detail on that. And then where does the topsoil, has that been stored on site? Because some of these were constructed in 2010, or at least the case started in 2010, not necessarily that they were built in 2010. Where is the topsoil located?
Sir Perry, do you know the answer to that? Question. Where is the topsoil stored, if it's stored on site or not? Is that the question, Commissioner?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the reclaimed
topsoil that you're referencing?
Well, the topsoil that would have been removed during construction of the road, is it pushed over on the berms of the road, or?
Normally it's smoothened out to the sides of the road, or normally where the road is built, the ground is compacted, and then usually that's where the gravel fill comes into play, the 6 inches of gravel for the road base.
Okay, so compacted as in it's underneath the gravel, the topsoil?
Correct.
Can you get a clean separation at that point in time of gravel versus the topsoil that's been compacted?
Okay, so they compact the road base with compactors, and then they come in with the gravel fill, and then they compact the gravel over the top of that.
It just seems like it might be embedded. The point I'm getting at, you can probably, as you might tell, I'm just wanting to make sure that if a facility, when it does come out of, when it's at the end of its useful life and the roads are removed, that it's not a gravelly topsoil mix, even though you're scraping off the top. It just seems at some point you're going to have to go deeper than the original surface of the topsoil to actually get all the gravel out.
They do. They generally, when they compact the soil, you know, for the road base, you know, the gravel fill that goes in is like a separate layer. Now, you know, over the course of time, you know, that can change some, but generally when they go in to remove the gravel, that layer, you know, right where it meets the soil, that's part of the gravel, the removal process. So generally speaking, the road base would be free of any rock or gravel material.
So you might lose a little bit of topsoil in the removal process?
You could possibly.
Okay. Now, for where the pedestals are, the turbines themselves, that topsoil has been removed, correct? And then stored somewhere? Since you're going down,
so the quite deep. Soil when they excavate for a foundation, the soil is stockpiled near the excavation, and when after the foundation has been installed, then they bring that soil back in, and there's probably an area of I would say 10 foot around the pedestal that's graveled, but the rest of the area is farmed, so the topsoil is back to within probably 10 foot of the pedestal.
Okay, so it's all on site. Do these costs include bringing any additional topsoil in?
Sean, do you have an answer to that?
Based on historical, you know, of what we've done, like what you guys were just talking about, most of this is on site. Any that would need to be brought in would be included in this number, but you know, I would not have to plan on bringing a lot in, if any. Most of this is just either bermed up, blended in. You know, we're talking about the sides of farmers' field. It's not exactly flat, but when they took this dirt out, they kind of just moved it around, pushed it around that foundation like you guys talked about, and blended it. So anything that would need to be bring in would be included in this number, but it's not large quantities.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. How about the concrete? The taking the concrete out, you know, to a depth of at least 36 inches below grade, where's that concrete hauled to?
Sean, do you want to take that as well?
Yep. So, again, this is all just based on regional things, exactly where the site is located. We've taken it to concrete recyclers, like a crusher for recycling, where they crush it down and use it as like a 2-inch or a 3-inch minus. We've also, with NextEra's approval on other sites in Pennsylvania and other places like that, have taken it and given it to the farmers and the local people that, because it's 363 exempt, so they can use that for land reclamation where they can reclaim land. So we've done everything. This number has it going down to 3 foot below grade and trucking it off site to an approved NextEra site is what these have. And if anything, there's wiggle room to reduce that cost by, you know, if you can figure out more economical, you know, ways to do it locally, but this is a number to get it off-site and take it to a local recycler or, worst case, a landfill or something like that. So.
Can you give me a few more sentences on, you've referenced approved NextEra site. I believe you used that for the scrap.
Right, so I guess just on that, what we do is we work for NextEra a lot in Florida Power. We do power plants for them. We do these wind farms for them. We do a lot of things for them. But anything that we do, we don't just take something off-site and take it to Joe Schmo's backyard. You know, so everything we do is, when I say NextEra approved, I mean that we go through the process with NextEra's from their project management level, and they run it up the chain to make sure that, yes, that is an acceptable final destination for either the scrap steel or the concrete or the dirt removed from off-site. That's all I'm saying. When I say NextEra approved is I'm not. It's not exactly. They don't have a list. Sometimes they give us a list on certain jobs, but it would just be to make sure that NextEra and probably subsequently you guys would approve of where the material is going.
Okay. So when I'm looking at the difference on 101, 10-101 versus 10-102. That backfill, topsoil, and seed number of 12,000 on 102 versus 13,500 on 101, that's related to miles of access roads or distance between turbines, which varies by facility. Is that the correct way to look at that?
Right, and then some width, you know, sometimes the width would vary on the roads or things, certain things like that. There, some of them have larger laydown areas right underneath the turbine by the tower than others. So that's just to factor in those things.
Okay. For all intents and purposes, or generally speaking, is there a large variation or significant variation in road construction techniques between the 14 different sites, or is it generally the same?
From what we saw, I don't have all of them open in front of me, but if there's one that's glaring, my guys may have found something, but I don't. Generally speaking, these roads are all about the same. You know, they dug out some dirt, they moved it around, they put some stone, and they compacted it. You know, sometimes some of the towers and some of these units are larger than other ones. So lay down areas and the roads, you know, that those things are a little larger. But other than that, unless I don't have every single one of these open in front of me, but they should be fairly consistent.
How many wind farms have you decommissioned?
General ballpark would be over 8 or 9, somewhere in there, over that number for sure. I don't have it in front of me, but we've done them in all over the country.
Have you ever had a case where you could not get rid of the gravel locally?
No.
Generally a waiting line for it then, or?
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you went to the farm, you went to the landowner and said that you had, you know, if you go to any landowner, I mean, I own a bunch of property, but if anybody came to my door and said that they had, you know, 40 dump truck loads of stone, I would sign on the dotted line, you know, if that makes sense. So if it's not him, it's the next guy. But, no, I've never had a problem either doing that or reselling it or any of that nature.
No, I wouldn't anticipate there would be because it's, you know, it is a useful commodity, particularly if it's free. In fact, I know of a few spots where...
There you go.
Oh, wait, I can't go there. That's right. All right, I'm going to defer to the other two commissioners at this point in time. I want to check a couple other things after your comments. So,
okay, I will pick up really kind of where Brian left off on these estimates, and I'm just going to say this and. I'm curious of your response to it, so it's not really a direct question, but I've always had concerns with what I think, based on the descriptions I hear, has been a bit of a cavalier attitude toward the topsoil that, well, we pack it down and then put the aggregate material over the top and later we can lift it back out, or it's kind of spread in the ditches, or not ditches, but the edges of the roads, and it kind of appears to me that we're going to get to the end and that the cost of scarify, okay, once you would pick up the aggregate material, then to just scarify the topsoil so you could keep it separate and lift that out and then scarify the subsoil so it's not compacted and then put the topsoil back, or to peel off a bunch of area where it's been blended out into the sides and then now you have more acres to reseed grass on. It just almost seems to me that that topsoil, unless it is stored somewhere, is going to be a net loser for you to try to recoup, and there's going to end up being a cost for bringing in topsoil. It's hard for me to fathom that that little bit of topsoil, especially when we're going over the tops of hills and such and in prairie country where it's thin anyway, that it would justify the costs to scarify that separately, lift it out, whole thing. So I'm worried about that. Is there any response to that, that should have been just stored?
Sean, do you have any thoughts on the decommissionings that you've seen on other sites that you guys have worked on that might be able to respond to that?
Well, yeah, I, again, I'm just going off of our historical, you know, our experience, and that's that generally the topsoil was dug out and it was put not far. It's put right there. So what we tend to do, and we get NextEra involved, you know, their project manager, we make sure that we get the local landowner involved and say, look, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to blend it. And I've never had an issue. I'm not saying that we won't, but I'm just saying that's what I'm going off of historically, is the topsoil's there. It's on the side. It's stacked up somewhere. You know, they didn't take it and run it out and mess up more of the field, of the landowner's field. They took it and they bermed it up somewhere next to it or around the tower, and that's where it is. You know, so it's pretty apparent our guys are, you know, that's all I can speak to, if that makes sense. So we've never had a problem. Our landowners have never had a problem, and NextEra has never had a problem with the way that we reuse what's there.
Okay, and my next question is for you too, Sean. The 8 or 9 wind farms that you've decommissioned, what were the sizes of some of the bigger turbines that were involved with those? Are we talking about something that is somewhat similar to the modern wind farms that we're talking about today, or are we talking about something from many decades ago that is hardly comparable?
We're talking about... Well, we do a lot of the service stuff for NextEra too. So, when you know turbines that have catastrophic failures where they have fires or things like that, so that's how we work on a lot of the modern ones. But most of them we do are probably 8 to 10 years old, somewhere in that range. For whatever reason they come down. So, but they're very similar in height and makeup. I mean, it's all basically the same. Some of the new ones are a little taller, but we're talking about 250 feet. To the center hub and things like that. So very similar units.
Okay, in the report from AES, it says DEMCO's data originated from decommissioning of turbines at wind farm sites with similar scopes of work. I'd like to have a couple of those cited as examples, if we could, please.
Okay. I mean, this isn't my call. So as long as NextEra is good, I don't want to speak to anything that NextEra doesn't want to. So,
yeah, we don't have that available now, but we'll go back and look at it and get something to you guys.
Thank you. Now I'm jumping back to kind of the beginning of the decommissioning plan. I didn't copy these all out either and bring them with, so. At the moment, I'm actually looking at 105, but for most of these questions, it doesn't have to do with a particular case either. But I did notice on, I think 13 of these had 35-year life expectancies, but case 102 has a 25-year life expectancy. Still GE turbines. What's the difference there?
So I don't have the specific language in front of me, but it has to do with the landowner leases at that site and the structure of the contracts that we have with the landowners. So the useful life at that site is slightly below, I think, because of the way the leases are written.
That explains it. I was looking awful hard in here to figure out what the difference was in those turbines. You know.
I did too.
And that one also has a little smaller decommissioning cost per turbine. And it looks like generally the newer ones, the 1.6 up to 2.1 megawatts, are a little higher. The older 1.5s are a little less. But that one is less than all the others. Is there something specific about that case also, that it's about $5,000 a turbine less?
Just to confirm, you're talking about 10-102?
Yes.
So, Sean, I don't know if you have a response available on that, but that's related to FPL Energy Burley County Wind.
Burley County. Hang on a second. Let me see. Let me refresh my memory here. Let me pull it up. Burley County.
Sean, it might also be under Wilton 1.
Okay, I got one under Wilton Wind. Okay, so I would have to just, if you guys give me a couple of minutes, I can look at it. I just have to pull it up. I mean, it's been a
Or we can get back to you with a response on that after as well.
We'll just come back to that, Sean.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have the numbers that you guys have. What was the other, the most comparative one we've been using was 101 or something? Which one is that also, if you guys could tell me the name of it?
Good comparisons would be 103 through 108. They're all 1.5 megawatts, and 3 through 8 are averaged 125,000 per turbine, and 102 was 120.
So, Sean, 103 is Astrobula 1, if that helps.
Okay, that does.
So maybe use that as a comparison versus Astrobula 1.
Okay, got it.
And the rest is, I just want to confirm some things that are really important to me, even though it's in here. But on all of these, it's a 3-foot depth for removing the concrete, correct?
Yes, I believe that's the case.
And kind of been over it, the aggregate will be scarified and then the base will be scarified, the aggregate will be hauled away, and things will be recovered, barring approval from the landowner and the commission that they can be left in place, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And the reseeding will be in accordance with the National Resource Conservation Service guidelines.
Correct. Okay. And what the landowners request at that time.
Well, but if...
Oh, right, sorry. Subject to commissioner approval, of course.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to be clear about that.
Yes. Sorry.
We don't want to work out deals where...
No.
Fine on the backside.
No.
I'm just going to tell you, I like the way these decommissioning plans were written, that you didn't manage to use up 100 pages, 3 or 4 pages worth of material and make it impossible to follow. But most of the things that I was particularly concerned about are in there. And so I just want to commend you on writing them clearly. And that they're pretty useful.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
I don't have any other questions unless Sean has found that answer, and if not, we'll wait until you do.
Still searching over here.
Okay. I'll turn it over to Julie for questions then.
Thank you.
I don't have a lot, so just a couple little follow-up questions. First of all, on the
on DEMCO's experience, the last time we talked about decommissioning, which was, Jerry, when was that, when we had the first 10-year plans? 3 years ago? Nobody had really any experience decommissioning or could even find those cases elsewhere. So I'd just like to know a little bit more about where these projects are occurring that are coming down and what's the circumstances for that. It's not something the industry has talked a lot about. Usually it's repowering, and there's a lot of talk about the fact that we're going to repower these and kind of like, well, we'll talk about decommissioning, but it's not going to be very likely. So tell me a little bit more about the scenarios where decommissioning is happening, if you guys have any, NextEra, have any experience directly with your company of decommissioning, or if not, if DEMCO can offer some insight on that.
Sure, thank you for that question. So we haven't had too many where we've just done a strict decommissioning. Majority of ours have been related to repowering. Some of them have been older turbines, as we talked about before.
Older meaning 8 to 10 years?
Yeah, or even older than that. We've had a number of sites out in California that we have... Sorry, Jason, too? Oh. Yeah, much, much older.
Okay.
Because
8 to 10 years doesn't seem old to me.
It's not. It's much older than that. Okay. So where we've had hundreds and hundreds of older turbines that are significantly smaller, and we've decommissioned those, taken them down. We've had to build new roads to go out and build the new site. So even though we've technically repowered it, we almost had to decommission because it was so old you couldn't really reuse any of the facilities that were there in those. So while we haven't really done a strict decommissioning only type site, to my knowledge.
So before you rebuilt that kind of a site where you pretty much wiped the slate clean, got rid of the old one, and then kind of prepared for a new one, how did it go?
I'll step in and see if Perry maybe has any other specifics on it. But from my knowledge, we were able to decommission the full site and rebuild everything in under 6 months. Like I said, we had to rebuild a number of the roads were too small for some of the bigger turbines we needed and not up to the standard we needed. I don't know that I would say we completely wiped the slate 100% clean. I'm not 100% familiar with every single specific piece of the farm that was reused again, but we essentially had to take out hundreds of turbines to be able to put 30, 40 turbines back up to replace the same number of megawatts or even more.
And there wasn't maybe, is it Perry, mm-hmm. can talk about any surprises or lessons learned in that just feat of taking down hundreds of towers and the base and all of that.
Okay, so I'm not sure that I understand your question, but the project that you're referring to is California?
Some of the California ones that we've decommissioned and repowered with the newer, more efficient technology.
So,
I'm curious if there's any surprises in the process of what you thought it was going to be like, taking the towers down, getting rid of the foundations, redoing the roads, or if it went just like you expected.
It went well. considering that we were in California and meeting their expectations for permitting and all of the environmental concerns that they have, the projects went very well, the decommissioning. And part of that process, the new roads were built for the new turbines. So were there surprises? I don't believe there were. We knew that... meeting the California expectations, we had to do our work very well. And at the end, it came out as expected.
Okay. And so budgetary, it was on budget. It wasn't over. It didn't cost a lot more money than you were anticipating.
No, everything was on budget and stayed within the budget.
Okay, good. DEMCO, any other experience you want to share with your decommissioning efforts?
Yeah, just basically we've only done a couple full decommissioning. A lot of our work is based on a few turbines here, a few turbines there. But basically, everything we've done, there's something we're not even talking about. I don't even want to go off on a tangent, but there's different ways to get these turbines down. We price these to pick these down with cranes, all of them, which is what we were asked to do, which is good, but there's also, there's considerable cost savings to cut and pull these over, you know, drain the oils ahead of time, cut and pull these over, and then clean them up where you don't need a crane or any of those things. We've done that in the past as well. So, you know, just as far as that, I'm very comfortable with our numbers on these. I think there's a considerable amount of contingency in our numbers as far as doing our work that NextEra provided us. So,
okay. And is your experience with the older farms as well, not the newer equipment, most of it?
Yeah, I don't know the exact years on the one. We fully decommissioned a site in Pennsylvania. I don't know the exact years. I don't know it off the top of my head. I could look that up, but I don't know. I don't have that information in front of me.
Okay. And then my other last question is, what could make these costs, or what could cause this estimate to be significantly off on the low side? So, like, not preparing enough. What sorts of circumstances could make this too low?
So I'll point that over to Sean, but I'll just mention that in many of the discussions we've had with Sean in creating these estimates, we've asked them to be very conservative with their numbers to make sure that these estimates are well above what they think the actual cost will end up being so that we feel that we're fully prepared and guaranteeing the amount that we need to be able to do that. Sean, do you have any other things to add to that?
Yeah, it's just basically, these sites were built in windy areas, so production issues, which we factored in, we've carried a heavy contingency for those kind of things. But you know, there's a lot of times where it's too windy, it's too foggy, there's a lot of things out of our control that'll either slow our work or shut us down for, you know, a few hours here or a day here, a day there. So that's one thing that's a major factor for us, is looking into, you know, a loss of production, because you have a fixed cost of, you have manpower there, you have cranes there, you have materials there, and if you're not working, you're still spending the money. So that's something we factored into each and every one of these, and it's just something to be aware of. You know, they're built in the right spots, because I've never been at one where it's not windy, you know. So, but that's one thing that, you know, kind of we put in our numbers, and I kind of told NextEra, if somebody gave me these jobs today, I'd quit everything else I was doing and go do that, you know. So, but that's kind of what, okay. As NextEra said, we put a lot of contingency and a lot of things into these numbers, and I'm fully confident that if I was at a competitive bid, I would be substantially off. I'd be substantially high.
Okay.
For these projects.
I just want our record to be clear, Danielle. When you say you asked them to estimate conservatively, that means estimate on the high side?
Correct.
If there's any doubt?
Yes, okay. Correct.
Okay. I'm assuming we're talking about financial guarantees next.
That's what I left it for later.
Because yeah. I have some questions about that, but I don't need to go there if
Let's
Brian
do that
has.
That's in the second round then.
Okay.
That's what I was waiting for too. Or Very I kind good. Of forgot, actually.
You forgot about financial guarantees? Randy.
I was so focused on getting the topsoil.
All right.
Well, I'm going to stay on round one just for one more question, and that is for the sites that have been decommissioned, and we might be asking for the same thing, but to get the latitude, longitude, or coordinates, just and to be honest, I want to take a look at these sites through Google Earth, because it's telling. You can see if there's a pattern that's developed where the roads are in terms of how the vegetation has come back, or if it's farmed, what that looks like. Just to get an aerial view, because I think we share the at least. You know, Commissioner Christman brought it up, and we share the same concern that it just goes back to its original state, and that would be helpful for me. So if you would be willing to share that, I could probably do enough research. I did look up Research Demco, saw where some of the sites were, but you'd save me a lot of time if I'm not digging through other commission documents. I'd appreciate that.
Yep, we'd be happy to get that for you.
You might as well just kick us off on the anything about the financial assurances to them, because I think that's the only questions that Julie or I had left. And it looks like Jack.
Commissioner Krosh, this is directed to you. I just want to make sure that you were requesting the latitude and longitude of the sites.
Well, it could be the township numbers, the section numbers, the legal description of the property that was restored.
Okay. Hey, Commissioner, I do have one question as well for the company. One thing that when I was looking at all these different decommissioning plans and cost estimates, they all have very similar numbers, and per turbine specifically. And I was assuming that bringing in the cranes and the different equipment would lead to, I guess, lower cost per turbine for a larger facility. And I was looking at PU-10-106, that's the Edgeley Wind Farm. That's only 14 turbines. And to bring in, I was assuming, the equipment in to decommissioning a smaller wind farm with only 14 turbines, 21 megawatts, I'd assume the price would actually be higher than the others. I was wondering if someone could speak to that and why the economies of scales aren't really have no effect on the per turbine cost in that.
Sean, do you want to speak to that?
Yep. So basically, a crane cost is a crane cost, okay? The one factor that you're speaking of is the MOB. So like a mobilization and a demobilization, which is a factor, but it's not we're using large cranes, but we're not using, a mobilization to that site would cost, I'm just going to throw, like I said, don't quote me on this, but let's just say it's $15,000 or $20,000 to get a crane mobbed in and demobbed out. So it doesn't impact the number as substantially. Your crane cost is they're going to charge you X amount per day, and they're going to have the labor, the operator is going to be X per day, or your crane's going to be X per day. So that's kind of the way that these were priced. These were priced using cranes at a daily crane cost, and the mobilization cost is insignificant compared to the amount of time and the amount of money you're spending on a crane there. The daily cost is the daily cost, if that makes if you hear what I'm saying.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Questions regarding the financial assurances or the decommissioning?
No more on the decommissioning at this point in time for me. On the financial assurances, maybe the company would like to just give a quick overview of that.
Sure. So I'm actually going to pass that off to our subject matter expert, Joe Balzano, who's the assistant treasurer. Joe, do you want to give a little intro?
Sure. So as was mentioned at the beginning of the proceeding, we are proposing that NextEra Energy Capital Holdings provide a guarantee here, as well as it having been approved in the past for other guarantee needs. Is it helpful for me to explain a little bit about the organizational structure and where NextEra Energy Capital Holdings, or NEECH, falls into this?
Yeah. Yes, I think that'd be good.
Please.
Have you guys disseminated the org charts?
Nope, I'm going to do that right now.
Okay, great. So while Danielle's doing that, I'll just provide a kind of a high-level description. NEECH is a wholly owned subsidiary of NextEra Energy, Inc., or what I'll refer to as NEE, which is a publicly traded company. NEE owns, and NextEra Energy Capital Holdings, NEECH, owns and provides funding for NextEra Energy Resources and its operating subsidiaries, including the North Dakota projects, as well as for Florida Power and as well as for Florida Power and Light, which is another wholly owned subsidiary of NEE. NEER and FPL constitute NEE's two principal subsidiaries. NEER, as you know, is the world's largest operator of wind, solar, and battery storage projects, and FPL is the largest electric utility in the state of Florida and one of the largest electric utilities in the U.S. NextEra Energy, Inc. has roughly a $70 billion market cap currently. So the parent, NextEra Energy, Inc., provides a absolute, full, and unconditional guarantee to to NextEra Energy Capital Holdings for its debt and contingent obligations. The benefit of this guarantee is that although NextEra Energy Capital Holdings and Florida Power and Light are sister companies, NextEra Energy Capital Holdings, through this guarantee, the creditors of NextEra Energy Capital Holdings get the benefit of NextEra Energy Inc.'s ownership interest in Florida Power and Light as well. Because of this guarantee, because of it being full and unconditional, the credit rating agencies ascribe NextEra Energy Inc.'s credit rating to Neach or Capital Holdings. And they do so because of this guarantee, because effectively NEE is backstopping NextEra Energy Capital Holdings. NEE is our issuer for equity capital, and NextEra Energy Capital Holdings is the issuer for our debt financing for everything outside of the state of Florida. So NEE had total assets of roughly $100 billion as of the end of last year, generated about $17 billion in revenues, and has, as mentioned earlier, a market cap of about $70 billion and an enterprise value of $107
billion. Can you speak to the credit rating for Neach?
Sorry, yes, that would have been helpful. Sorry about that. So NextEra and Neach are rated A- by both S&P and Fitch, and Baa1 by Moody's. All on stable outlook. We if you were to listen to our earnings calls or any of our investor presentations, our management team is very vocal and makes very clear to the public, to the investors, to the rating agencies, to the regulators across the country and the states in which we operate, that they are fully committed to maintaining our strong credit position and maintaining our credit ratings. It's something that we view as being a significant competitive advantage for ourselves relative to our peers, and it's something that our management team focuses on heavily. I'm responsible for working with the rating agencies, and candidly, it makes my job a lot easier when there's a management team that is so supportive of maintaining a strong credit position.
Thank you, Joe.
I really don't have any questions. I read both reports last night and went through them, and so no, I really don't.
Okay. I probably have less familiarity with this than Brian. Not probably. I definitely do. So when you issue corporate guarantees like this, does that show up on the books then like a debt would, or the credit rating agencies see that you have guaranteed something and so it's an obligation that's sitting out there, a potential obligation?
Sure. So a guarantee is not recorded as debt on our balance sheet. However, in the footnotes to our financial statements that are filed with the SEC, we disclose the expected amount or the expected obligation under all of our guarantees. And the rating agencies are very familiar with that number.
So it is in FCC reports and that the rating agencies use when doing ratings, right? In the footnotes.
Correct.
Can you share that, Joe? That number?
I'm sorry. Oh, the total number was about $5.5 billion as of the end of last year.
In corporate guarantees?
In corporate guarantees that Capital Holdings has made. Keep in mind that there's a different variety of guarantees, so not all of them are something that's linked to, for example, the decommissioning of a site. A lot of them pertain to, for example, how we manage cash on a consolidated basis. And so it's a little more complicated than to explain just how we would guarantee the decommissioning of a wind site.
Okay, and when these guarantees would be listed in the footnotes of FCC reports.
I'm sorry, SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. I apologize.
I should have known that too. But when they are listed, is that for NextEra Energy Capital Holdings only, or is that also reflected on NextEra Energy Inc.'s?
That's reflected on NextEra Energy Inc.'s financial statements.
Okay. And I guess my next question is really more for staff. How does this filing compare to what we currently do with our mine reclamation where we have corporate guarantees?
Commissioner, I have looked at the filings for the coal reclamation. Jerry, have you looked at them as well? And they're similar. However, they're not exactly the same. And I guess for the commissioner's information, currently what we have now from the company would not be acceptable to the state of North Dakota. That being said, there's room to work with this. This was more of a starting point. They're required to make this filing to be in compliance. They have. And I imagine a similar form, but there'll have to be changes before the actual final financial or parental guarantee is finished up with the company.
Is that because the A minus?
It has nothing to do actually with the credit rating. It has more to do with legal requirements under the AG's office as well as risk management.
Can you elaborate?
Sure. Specifically, there are a number of things, including form selection clauses. I don't have the full list in front of me. I did have a marked up version, but not on me right now. But there are a few different little things that need to be changed.
In the format of the actual guarantee that they provided.
That's correct, Commissioner.
And our requirements say A category or higher. I remember a lot of talk about this, and is A category include anything in the A category, or is there a specific A, is A minus lower than that?
Commissioner, that's something I probably wouldn't be able to speak to right off the bat on this.
Joe, do you have like a...
Yeah, so the rating agencies consider A minus, A flat, and A positive, A plus, as all being in the A category.
Okay.
I believe our language is A rating.
It's the A category. And if I do recall now, that was actually an A rating, and I think it was actually switched to an A category to encompass an A minus rating as well, to broaden it out.
I'm not 100% sure either, but that's the way I recall it.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And I think it said they're the highest rating from the agency.
Just as a little anecdotal sidebar, of the about 200 electric utilities in the country, only 15 are rated higher than NextEra.
Mm-hmm.
But so, Jack, to just elaborate on that, you think that the shortcomings, if that's the right word, of what's been filed here with what our requirements are on mining and with the requirements of the risk management and AG's office are things that are not, maybe deal breakers or something, but things that can be worked through.
Mr. Chairman, I do think there are things that will be able to be worked through. Looking and even comparing their document with the mining documents, they're fairly similar. So I being that this is the first time we've done financial assurances for wind farm, this was kind of our opportunity to take a look at these and create a template from this. And so at this point in time, it's more of a working process since this is the first one we've had to do. And so there are going to have to be a couple changes, but I don't think there are going to be changes that are going to be unagreeable to the company. overall.
Thank you. I don't have any other
questions. I don't either. Not on the
staff, anything else?
No questions from staff.
How big is I'm just curious.
How big is what was the question? FPL's load?
FPL's load, yeah.
I don't know that off the top of my head. Do you know, Jason?
It fluctuates. It's about. You have to use the microphone.
Jason Utton, NextEra. Joe, you may know this. I believe FPL's load fluctuates anywhere between 12,000 to 15,000 megawatts on any given day. And believe it or not, our biggest load is when we have our coldest days in the year and everyone has to turn on their heaters.
Okay. Thank you.
Andrew finds that very believable at this point in time.
Anything else in closing,
Brian? No, thank you for putting this together. I would echo Chairman Christman's remarks. I think it was done very well. And yeah, I'd like to see a little more detail, and I mentioned the things that I'd like a little bit more on, but you know, appreciate you coming in and taking the time.
And Sean, were you ever able to resolve why that one wind farm had a lower per turbine cost?
I have not yet. I'm trying to track down my team to see if there was a reason or what the reason was, whether it's access egress or maybe I'm unable to do it currently right now.
I'm looking at that.
See if I can track that down. So. Okay.
We'll work with Sean and get a response back for you on that. We'll just dig into it. Yeah.
Okay, so you don't have to hurry anymore then.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. Thank you.
Julie, did you have any?
I don't. I appreciate having all the experts here too and having a full team of folks available to answer our questions. So thank you very much.
I think this was really useful. As I said, I was pretty pleased with not only the readability but the information that was in the decommissioning plan. In the financial assurances stuff, I'm going to want to talk to staff more. You know, I'm really proud of what North Dakota has done for a half a century of coal mine reclamation, and we use financial assurances there. And I really think that we need to maintain some consistency. It would be hard to, in my mind, as a commissioner, say, well, here, this lower standard is okay for the wind industry, but we're still going to hold the mining industry to the tougher standard. And I really don't want to, at this point in time, see a reason to lower their standards, because what we have seems to be workable and working. So I'm looking forward to some more information on resolving differences there and making sure that this financial assurances package is something we can work with. Are there any objections to the evidence produced becoming part of the official record? And when I say that, I'm talking about the handout that you distributed as well as the oral testimony?
No.
Okay. Then the evidence will become part of the record upon which future decisions will possibly be made. Are there any other matters for the record?
Commissioner, since this is a record hearing, it would be, I guess, probably going over the other items that were specified that the commissioners wanted to hear or see after the hearing. Were you intending to have that part of the record as well?
Yes.
Okay. So and correct me if I'm wrong, Casey, I believe these are the four that I have. Are the detailed methodology for the cost of road reclamation for Commissioner Crosius. Is that correct? The similar types of Denko decommissioning examples for comparison Commissioner Christman asked for, as well as the reason for the lower per turbine cost in case number PU 10-102.
Correct, yes.
And Commissioner Crosius, you also requested the legal descriptions or latitude and longitude of the wind farm so you're able to pull up an aerial view for the purposes of reviewing road layouts.
Yes.
Anything else, Commissioner?
Okay.
Next, I will follow up by providing those similar to a late filed exhibit.
Okay. And So just so my question and comments were clear, those responses, are there any objections to those becoming part of the record?
No, Commissioner.
So then when they're submitted, they will become part of the official record. With that, we are closed. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.